Morning, how are we doing this morning? Hey, great to see you here. My name is Sean. I have the opportunity to serve as the campus pastor of South Barrington. I want to welcome those of you who are joining us online. It is great to have you and all of our Willow locations. Great to have you with us as well. We're in week two of a series that we started last week called What Gives? And this is not just about the giving, it's about the heart that's behind our giving, because God is really most concerned about our heart. Now, maybe you already know this, but Jesus' most frequent topic of teaching actually was money. He talked about money more than he did about heaven, about prayer. He talked about money more than he did about forgiveness, about the evil one. You name the topic, Jesus talked more about money. But why did he talk about it? Have you ever wondered that? I don't think it's because he wanted it. Instead, what Jesus wants is what's attached to it. So often, what gets attached to our dollars is our heart. And Jesus is incredibly concerned about our heart. It was actually a couple of weeks ago, I heard somebody say this statement that was really challenging for me, but it really stuck with me. Here was the statement. They said, money issues are rarely math problems. They are more often a heart problem. And there's something about that statement that at first I went, I don't know about that. I had a little bit of resistance to it, but the more I sat with it, the more it really challenged me. That money issues aren't just math problems, they're heart problems. And I think about so many things in my life when they go off to the side, what's behind that is some sort of heart issue. So for example, when I'm just almost consumed with getting more money, like consumed with it, almost like an obsession, what's really behind that is a greedy heart. If I find myself in a season where I'm overspending and I'm almost overindulging, I'm racking up some debt, what's really behind that, what's behind that is a discontent heart. If I ever find myself in a season where I'm hoarding everything and I'm not willing to share with even those who have need around me, I might say I've got a stingy heart. And so what's fascinating about this statement, it's been really challenging to me that money issues are rarely math problems. More often than not, they are heart problems. And so really throughout the series, we want to look at the heart behind the dollars. Not just the dollars, we want to look at the heart behind the dollars, because I think that that's what God is most interested in the first place. Now, if you want to take what we're talking about in the series and go a little bit deeper with it, I'd love to invite you to join some groups we've launched around here called Freed Up Groups. The whole hope of freed up groups is sometimes money gets a grip on us and we want to be freed up from its grip on us. And so freed up is a great experience. It's just a group study that a few of our groups are going through together. There really is a track for everybody. And so track one is designed for people who are living paycheck to paycheck or having a hard time making ends meet, maybe finding themselves in a little bit of a debt. And so what track one does is help people form a spending plan, debt eradication, that type of thing, so people can experience freedom. Track two are for people who are able to make ends meet, but they're having a hard time getting ahead. And so what track two does is to help us understand the heart of stewardship in a way that we'd be able to experience some margin, and so therefore we would experience freedom. We'd be freed up. Track three is designed for people who have more than enough, but nevertheless, they still feel kind of the grip. They don't feel a sense of freedom. And so what track three does is help people discover just the joy of what it looks like to live in such a way that we can leave a legacy. And there's some freedom attached to that. So if that's something interested to you, we have a few spots left in these groups. They will probably fill up this week. So I would encourage you to go to willowcreek.org/groups. You can sign up, jump into one of those groups. Really hope that serves you. But as we think about, you know, this series, again, the series is all about the heart behind our giving. So last week, Dave did a fantastic job talking about a thankful heart. And he talked about the tithe as a principle that the Bible gives us as a way to express that thankful heart. Today, we're going to talk about what it looks like to live out a sacrificial heart. And so as I think about sacrifice, there's a couple of principles that I want to lean into as it relates to sacrifice. Here's the first principle. I would say that sacrifice is an expression of love. Like fundamentally, when we really love someone, sacrifice becomes an expression of that love. Now, I was thinking about it this way. Lindsay and I have known each other now for just over 23 years. We're coming up on our 20-year wedding anniversary this May, so we're really excited about that. And so I've known her just over half my life, And we knew each other about 3.5 years before we got married. And so people have asked us, you knew each other 3.5 Sean, what took you so long to seal the deal, right? And so we knew each other for a while. We dated for a while. We were engaged for a while. And then we'd eventually got married. But the truth is, I knew I wanted to marry her about a year before I actually proposed. And you're like, Sean, what were you waiting for? Well, the truth was, I was dead broke and I couldn't afford a ring. And so I remember going to the ring store and looking. I found one that I thought was a really nice ring. It was pretty modest. I remember it cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,500, which felt just like this insurmountable amount of money at the time for me. I was waiting tables. I just graduated grad school. Every dollar that I had was going to rent and ramen because that's all I could afford to eat. And so that's kind of where I was at. And so I remember the thought of purchasing something that was $1,500. It just felt like it was not going to be possible. Now, the store that I was going to buy the ring at, they had a 12-month 0% financing type of thing. And so I thought, okay, if I could take that and divide it between 12 months, I still don't have that much money. I can't afford that much of a payment. And so they also had a program called a layaway program. Anybody remember layaway? I don't think layaway is a thing anymore. If you're probably under 35, you're like, I don't know what layaway is. That's basically when you're so broke, you can't even finance it. So basically you say, I want to put this on layaway, meaning they won't sell it to another customer. They hold it in the back. You just go in and you make payments. You try to pay down the balance to the place that you finally can take it out. And so I paid on that little ring for 9 months to get the balance low enough so that eventually I could take it out to finance it for 12 more months. That's where I was at. I mean, it was a labor of love, people. But eventually when I got the ring and I was able to propose to my now bride, it made it all worth it. I mean, I think about that season, that was such an incredible sacrifice, but sacrifice is simply an expression of love. I would go as far to say this. Any relationship founded on love is fueled by sacrifice. That's just kind of the way it works. Like any relationship that is founded on love is fueled by sacrifice. And when we're unwilling to live out a sacrifice, the question becomes, am I really driven by love in the first place? Because sacrifice becomes the action by which love comes to fruition. I think about the story of, let me share one more principle with you this. I thought about this, that you can give without loving, but you cannot love without giving. Now think about that from a heart posture for me for just a second. You can give without loving, but you cannot love without giving. Here's what I mean by that. It's possible to give without the right motive. I mean, I can give out of obligation. I can give out of coercion. I can give out of manipulation. There's a lot of things, of reasons why I can give. It's possible to give without loving, but I would say it's impossible to love without giving. Any relationship founded on love will be fueled by sacrifice. I think that was true in the story of King David. Now, many of you probably know that the story of King David from the Old Testament of the Bible, he was the shepherd boy who slayed the giant. He eventually became king of all of Israel. Now, I love David's story. He had this incredible heart for God. He was actually called a man after God's own heart, and that's not because he always got it right. What we know about David's story is he had all kinds of missteps and flaws, miscues along the way. However, what I love about David, even though he didn't always get it right, he always was willing to make it right. He had this beautiful heart for God, this beautiful love that was always expressed to God. And when you find his story in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 24, he was already king. And even as king, he had a season of disobedience that he didn't do what God had asked him to do. And in this moment of disobedience in 2 Samuel chapter 24, he was finding himself facing consequences from his disobedience. And in that, he wanted to make things right. Again, he didn't always get it right, but he was really wanting to make it right with God. And so he wanted to acquire this piece of land, build an altar, offer a sacrifice to God because his relationship with God was founded on love. So it had to be fueled by sacrifice for him. And so he wanted to acquire this piece of land. It wasn't just any piece of land. This particular piece of land, scholars suggest, was the very piece of land that Abraham was going to sacrifice his son Isaac until God provided that lamb, that sacrificial ram in the thicket, if you will. It was the piece of land that was referred to as Mount Moriah. It eventually became the very piece of land that the temple, like Israel's temple, was built on this land. Even to this day, this piece of land is arguably the most contested, the most sought after, the most valuable piece of property in the entire world. And so here in this moment, 2 Samuel 24, David wanted to acquire this land from a guy by the name of Arana, who owned this land. And so he approaches Arana for the land, and here's what we find in 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 23. It says this: Arana said to David, "Let my lord the king take whatever he wishes and offer it up. I mean, here are the oxen for burnt offering. Here's the threshing sledges. Here's the ox yokes for the wood. Your majesty, Arana gives all this to the king." Arana also said to him, "May the Lord your God accept you." So David comes to acquire the land. Arana goes, "Hey, bro, it's yours. I mean, you're the king. The least I can do is give you anything that you need to do whatever you need to do with it." And what's surprising is, though he was trying to give a gift to David, David was not willing to receive it. Look at David's response in the very next verse. It says, "But David, the king, replied to Arana, 'No, I insist on paying you for it.'" Then look what he says this. I love this statement. "I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing." This statement has marked me. I will not give to God that which costs me nothing. David knew this principle. This relationship with God that was founded on love must be fueled by sacrifice. It was the heart by which he wanted to express his love for God. Sacrifice is an expression of love. That's the first principle about a heart of sacrifice. Here's the second principle that I think is equally important. I would say sacrifice builds our trust in God. Sacrifice builds our trust in God. I recently saw a report from the American Psychological Institute that they put out this research study every year that's called Stressors in America, Stressed in America. The 2023 report shows that we are more stressed out than we've ever been as a country. Now, you may look at that and you go, "That's not surprising. I feel that." They note that we are more stressed out tangibly than we ever have been, certainly more so since the pandemic. And they note all kinds of stressors we feel, from political instability to even family concerns. That's especially true for those of you who are parents. You feel the stress of all of it. Now, they break down the different things that cause different people stress. They look at different age brackets, four different age brackets of adults. If you were to guess what the number one stressor in every single category be, what would you think it would be? Money, number one in all four categories. And in three of the four categories, number two, anybody wanna guess what number two was? The economy was number two. And so personal finances was number one, kind of the macro scenario of the economy was number two. So money took the number one and number two spot for the stress that we experience as people. So how do you deal with stress? Like, how do you manage stress? Well, stress comes when I feel like that the outcome or the future is somewhat uncertain, and even if it feels out of my control. But I would go as far to say this. I think this is a really important principle for us. Our worry decreases when our trust in God increases. Can I say that again? Our worry decreases when our trust in God increases. The truth is, if my worry is attached to things that are uncertain about the future or feel out of control in the future, things that I can't be guaranteed about in the future, if I fundamentally have this deep core belief that God is a trustworthy God, that God will take care of every one of my needs, if I really believe that he can be trusted, my worry decreases as my trust in him increases. I learned this firsthand a number of years ago. It was 2012. I was serving at a church in Naperville, Illinois. We were launching a financial campaign in order to build a new auditorium. Anybody who's been around a church during seasons like that, you know maybe what it's like to be a part of a larger financial campaign. I was asked to lead out in the campaign, and so it was my responsibility to make sure that the campaign was launched and was moving forward in the right way. And I knew, as the person who was leading out in the campaign, I knew that whatever the gift was that my wife and I were going to consider giving to the campaign, I knew that it needed to represent the biggest sacrifice. Now, I knew that we didn't have the means to be the largest gift, but it needed to represent the biggest sacrifice. And so Lindsay and I were on the same page about that. We were fully committed that that would be true. Now, however, at the same time, we were wrestling on a personal level about some changes felt like we needed to make in our own family. At the time, I was working as a pastor. My wife was working as a labor delivery nurse. She was a fantastic nurse, but as most nurses do when they start out, she worked nights as a nurse. Well, when we had our two boys and we had two young kids in the home, it was very challenging for me to live out my role as a pastor, her to work nights as a nurse, and figure out how to manage two little ones that were running around our house. And so we wrestled with that, we struggled with that, and after a lot of prayer and consideration, we felt like the best decision for our family in that season was for her to resign her job as a nurse in order to come home to invest in our kids. It was going to create quite the strain for us to go back to a single income, but we felt like it was the right thing to do during that season. And so on one hand, our income as a family was going down at the same time that we were feeling compelled that we needed to give the largest sacrificial gift representative of this particular campaign. We felt the tension of it. And so we prayed a lot about it. We tried to really seek God. God, what would you have us do in this season? And we collectively both came to the same conclusion. We felt like God was calling us to commit a number that was pretty close to the number that we would have received from Lindsay's nursing salary. So basically, we committed her nursing salary, the salary that we were no longer earning. And so it was let me just be honest, it was terrifying, is the best way to describe it. On one hand, I felt like that's what God was asking us to do. On the other hand, I felt scared out of my absolute mind that we wouldn't be able to actually fulfill it. But nevertheless, we walked in step together, trusting that that's what God was asking us to do. We got close to the commitment weekend of the campaign. I was the one preparing the message for that weekend. And as I prepared the message and I prepared to encourage and maybe even challenge our congregation to come alongside and to be a part of this sacrificial season in order to see God's kingdom move forward, I felt like God wouldn't let me. I felt this unsettled peace that I felt like God was asking us to give a little bit more than what we had originally committed. And I remember wrestling with God over it, going, God, my commitment is, I'm already out over my skis, God. Like, I'm already at a place that I'm not exactly sure where this is coming from. I don't know how I'm gonna fulfill what you've already asked me to do. But really specifically, I felt like God was asking us to commit an additional $5,000 to what we had already committed. I was scared out of my ever-loving mind. And nevertheless, I talked to God about it. And I was like, well, if that's what you want us to do, I'm going to need your help convincing Lindsay that that's what you want us to do. And so I called Lens. And I said, babe, I need to take you out and we need to have a conversation. So I took her out to a really nice dinner. And while we were at Chili's, we had this really important conversation. And I shared with her my wrestle. I shared with her what I felt like God was asking us to do. And I remember looking at her, and I could see the fear in her face. I felt it at the same time. We cried together as we dipped chips in queso. It was kind of a whole scene there. And I'll never forget when Lindsay looked back at me, and she said, Sean, this doesn't make any sense to me. But I trust you, and I trust God. If that's what God's telling us to do, I'm in. It was a moment for us. We ate that dinner on a Friday night. That Sunday, we went to church that morning. We sat side by side in church, and we filled out a commitment card that reflected the totality of that commitment. It's hard to describe the amount of fear I felt when I put that commitment in front, but we were trusting that God would somehow help us do what we felt like God was calling us to do. That was Sunday. Sunday afternoon, I got a call from a guy that I knew. I didn't know him really well, but I knew him. And he called me and he said, hey, I need to meet with you tomorrow morning. I looked at my calendar. I had an all-day retreat. There was no way I could meet with him the next day. So I said, I'd love to meet with you. I just can't tomorrow. Let's find a time sometime later in the week. He said, Sean, I need to meet with you tomorrow morning. I'll meet with you as early as you need to meet, but it needs to be tomorrow morning. I was like, okay. And so we made the decision to meet in the Starbucks parking lot at stupid 30 in the morning. I'm pretty sure God was still asleep the same time that we decided to meet together. But we met in the Starbucks parking lot. Everything was still closed, really dark outside. When I pulled into the parking lot, he was obviously the only other car there. He gets out of his car. I get out of mine. We meet. He hands me this envelope. And he says, I'm not sure what you're supposed to do with this. Like, I don't know if you need to take your family on vacation, if you need to do something else. I don't really know what you're supposed to do with it. I just know I'm supposed to give it to you. This has never happened in my entire life, but I felt very specifically called to hand you this. And he handed it to me. He went, got back in his car, and he drove away. I thought, this was the most strange interaction I've ever had in my life. And I went back to the driver's seat of my car. I opened the envelope, and inside the envelope was a check for $5,000. I get teared up in this moment. I bawl like a baby in my car that day. I called my wife, who was obviously asleep, and I woke her up. And I'm like, babe, you'll never believe what just happened. We just sat and we cried on the phone together. Now, I knew what that check was for. That check was not for a vacation. It was not for us to go enjoy and do something with. I knew what God was doing. God had asked us to extend that commitment, and that was the very first gift that we were going to make toward that commitment. It was almost as God was saying, just trust me. If you trust me, I will prove myself trustworthy to you. Now, we still had a large commitment to fulfill over the next 2 years. But I will tell you, looking back, there has never been a more exhilarating season in my faith journey than that 2 years watching God show up unexpectedly over and over and over and over again. What's fascinating is we actually, during that season, we got called to another church. We actually moved to Las Vegas during that season before the campaign was done. I remember arriving at the church in Vegas, and I said, I know this sounds crazy, but before I start giving here, I've got to fulfill a commitment that I made. Because I didn't make that commitment to a church. I made that commitment to God, and I needed to fulfill that commitment. And so I remember, gosh, I still get choked about this 12 years later. I remember flying back from Vegas to Naperville. At the end of that campaign, I remember sitting in that same church on the very final commitment Sunday, as Lindsay and I wrote the final check to fulfill that pledge commitment. And it was this miracle in our lives that somehow God had made it possible. It was the most significant faith growth journey of my entire life. Now, the reason I tell you that story is not so that you pat me on the back and go, wow, Sean, that's really cool that you gave like that. God's really clear about the heart of generosity. It's not to be known by others. That's not why I tell you the story. I also don't tell you the story because I want to promise you that God will show up that way in your life every single time. I don't know why God does what he does sometimes and others not. And so I don't want to create the scenario that God will show up financially in that way every single time. But I do know this. And the reason I tell you the story is because when our trust increases, our worry decreases. And when you do what God says to do, God will do what he says he will do. Our God's a trustworthy God. Our God will show up every single time. And I tell you, if we're willing to extend a sacrificial heart toward him, you will see him show up in your life in unbelievably life-changing type of ways. I love talking about giving. Not because I want something from people. I want you to experience what I've experienced in my life. Giving is the single greatest catalytic moment in my faith journey. I trust God more today than I would if I didn't learn to give sacrificially to him. It has fundamentally changed my life. As I think about giving sacrificially, you know, sacrifice is an expression of love. What's true about sacrifice, it helps build our trust in God. What I love about David, again, he acquired this piece of land. And if you fast forward a little bit later, a couple books later, the book is 1 Chronicles, they're actually going to build the temple on this land. You find the story in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. David's heart, his sacrificial heart, is still very present. Here's what it says. It says, then King David said to the whole assembly, my son Solomon, the one whom God has chosen, is young and inexperienced. The task is great because this palatial structure is not for man, but it's for God. Again, every gift that we give sacrificially, it's not for a structure. It's not for a church. These gifts are for God and really for God alone. And so David continues this, with all my resources I provided for the temple of my God, gold for the gold work, silver for silver, bronze for the bronze, iron for the iron, wood for the wood, as well as onyx for the settings, turquoise stones of various colors, and all kinds of fine stone and marble in all the large quantities. Basically what David's talking about is, here's the whole treasury of Israel that I'm making available for the building of the temple. Now before we kind of, roll our eyes that a politician has no problem spending other people's money, here's what David says next. He says, besides, in my devotion to the temple, I also give my personal treasures of gold and silver for the temple of my God. Over and above everything I provided for the temple. Basically, what David is saying is, I'm in. Like I'm all in. That same heart in 2 Samuel 24 that I will not give to God that which cost me nothing is the same heart that shows up in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. I will not give to God that which cost me nothing. And it was so inspiring to the whole community around him that it says that then the leaders of the families, the officers of the tribes of Israel, the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds, and the officials in charge of the king's worth, they all gave what? They all gave willingly. Look at their heart. It wasn't out of obligation. It wasn't because somebody twisted their arm hard enough. It's because they joined David in David's heart. And David responds in such an incredible way. David, talking to God, says this. He says, I know, my God, that you test the heart and you're pleased with the integrity. All these things I've given willingly, and I've given them with honest intent. And I've seen the joy of how willingly your people who are here have also given to you. Look at the heart posture behind the gift. It's not about the gift. It's about the heart behind the gift that makes all the difference in the world. And so last week we talked about what it looks like to give with a faithful heart. But today we're going to talk about what it looks like to give with a sacrificial heart. This week I just spent a little bit of time and thought through like all the different reasons why I give. And as I began to think through it and reflect it just got a lot of energy and motivation in my own journey. I just wanted to share with you. I mean, I give because I want to put God first. I give because I want to honor him. I want to give because I want to grow in my trust relationship with him. And it's one of the most tangible ways I know how to grow in my trust relationship with him. I give because I fundamentally believe, empowered by the Holy Spirit, the church is still the hope of the world. I believe it. And I know that the church is, I know the church doesn't always get it right. I know the church makes mistakes. I know that the church sometimes messes up. But fundamentally, I still believe, empowered by the Holy Spirit, the local church is the hope of the world. The truth is, God used the church to save my life. I was 18 years old when a group of people who were connected to a local church truly connected me to God who transformed me from the inside out. I believe in the church because I was changed by the church. And so I give because I care about fueling God's mission in a powerful way. I sometimes give for selfish reasons too. I give because it gives me joy. I give because I love seeing the looks on people's faces when they receive something that was unexpected that really meets their needs. I give for life change. I give so that we see people experience life change and give their lives fully to Jesus. I give so students can come to know him. I give so that the marriages can be restored. I give so that people who are battling addiction can find freedom. I give so that young adults can find purpose. I give so that our global partners in different parts of the world can become farmers through the seeds that we send. I give so that prisoners can receive hope through a gift that comes around every Christmas. I give because I'm committed to loving God, loving people, and partnering as a community to change the world. It's what drives me. And I want to encourage you to think through what it looks like to give with a thankful heart, to give with a sacrificial heart. We asked a few people around Willow, people who are committed to the mission in very different ways, to share a little bit about how God uses their own story about why they give what they give. Check this out.
I grew up watching my mom fill her offering envelope. She was a consistent giver who really impressed on me the importance of honoring God with our finances, which really set me on the course to being a Christ-first giver. And now my husband and I are on a journey of finding ways to participate with God in his ministry of compassionate giving by helping those in need and finding ways to partner with him to catalyze ministry initiatives through the church.
I think when we first started, you know, giving, we've always given, and it's always been what's comfortable for us.
A few years ago, we heard Pastor Dave Dummett speak on generosity and giving, and he gave a challenge to people to try to tithe. That's where we made the decision to start tithing.
I thought generosity meant you had to lose something. I'm losing money, I'm losing resources, something is being taken away from me.
What I feel like the Bible teaches us about giving and tithing, I feel like it's a place of obedience. I remember first getting the invitation where they were going to be launching a new group called a Catalyst Team, and it would be centered around generosity and opportunities to give.
One Friday evening, I was in the office here at the house working. It was a late night, and she came in, and
he told me he quit his job.
Well, I hadn't quit yet. I said, I can't do this anymore.
It was too much to juggle for him to try and carry this full-time job and
go to school and my internship.
It was just a lot, and it was wearing him down.
Yeah.
And so here we are, a very unknown and very uncomfortable time for us.
I have a heart for global missions. Going and seeing people in other countries know the gospel and really encounter God. I had heard stories of Catalyst givers who had heard about a need and were able to give thousands of dollars to meet that need. And I knew that that wasn't me. I wasn't able to do that or meet a need in that way. And so I really struggled, I think at that point, with feeling like I belonged to the group.
And so we are sitting, having coffee, doing the budget, and we have this credit card that has a balance that has somehow gotten to be more than what we're comfortable with. A lot of anxiety for me and struggle, not knowing how to pay that. When I got to work, I checked my pay stub and I knew what it was supposed to be. And when I opened it, it was a lot more than what I had expected, which was a great surprise. And so I was doing the math and happened to be the exact amount that we owed on our credit card bill, down to the last dollar. And at that moment, like, the feeling is indescribable. No other words could explain it, but it was a God thing. You know, God's hand was all over that.
Currently, I'm a junior at high school right now. I'm involved in an engineering program, which is pretty cool, and that's kind of where I think my life might be heading right now. We had the JHM service as normal, and I walked outside, and in the hallway there was all these amazing devices and all these amazing engineering stuff. One of them was the water wheel, and I walked out, and the second I saw that, oh my gosh, something hit me, because that device, it allowed people to transport water so much easier than the way they normally do it, and they used that device to help so many people across the world. The second I saw it, it just made me want to help these people. So I was lucky enough to be able to get connected with my youth pastor at the time, and he allowed me to make a little bit of a donation, but it was enough to buy one of those things, and that I just knew was going to help people across the world. So
the director of the Catalyst Initiatives, she responded just so graciously and assured me that the Catalyst group was really about having a heart of generosity and that I absolutely had a seat at the table.
It may be interesting to know that some of our consistent givers at Willow are from correctional facilities. One such story is Charles. He recently wrote a letter to us sharing that he gives because we're one of the only communities that came around his sister and helped her with her rent and food, and our programs actually helped her raise her kids. And there are more stories like this. $5 here, $10 here, $20 there, all from correctional facilities. Charles is currently in prison, and he has regularly given to Willow by sending a tithing check every other month for the last 12 years out of his very, very modest earnings.
What's changed for us now is knowing that, God has us and God will see us through, and it's that trust that we can have in our giving and knowing that we have the ability to bless others, the church and others through our tithing.
When it comes to money and resources, sometimes I like to think of, you're not losing money, you're using money. You're using it for good. You're using it to help the experience of other people. It could be people across the world, it could be people right next door to you, but it makes generosity seem like something that builds things and not just takes away.
You know, I feel like we all have times where we feel like what we have to offer isn't enough. But when we decide to trust God with what we do have, and when we give it to him, he's able to multiply it in ways that we really can't imagine.
The generosity journey is not a linear path where the goal is to arrive at a certain giving level, but rather it's a journey of continually accepting God's invitation to use our resources and join him in the work he's already doing. Whatever situation you may find yourselves in today, we can ask the question, do we have the heart to be generous? With the right heart, our giving will follow.
We're going to move in the time of our service that we give back our tithes and our offerings. We love this moment around here so much so that we typically celebrate it every time that we get this moment in the service. And the reason we do is it's not just about the gift that's given, it's about the heart that's behind the gift that's given that really matters. And so I want to invite you, if you'd like to give, we're going to go ahead and pass the bags. We'll have the ushers do that. You guys can pass the bags. As we do so, around here we've been talking about these kind of four different types of givers. We call them the four C's around here. And I want to encourage you to consider jumping in to become one of these types of givers if you've never done so, that even though the bags are passing, you can literally in this moment get out your phone and participate this way. I want to invite you to do one of these four things. The first one we call a compassionate giver. And basically that's just the desire that I'm moved with compassion. I want to do something that really benefits somebody else very, very quickly. And so as we think about a compassionate giver, one of the most tangible ways to do that around here is what we call the dollar club. A dollar club is when we give at least a dollar every single week, and we take those collective dollars and we just use it to bless somebody in need in our community. And so if you were to go to willowcreek.org/givenow, once you establish an account there, you'll see a drop down that says dollar club. If you want to kind of jump in as a compassionate giver, the best way to do so is just jump into the dollar club. Just give a dollar every single week. And then I think that God will do something special in and through your life in that way. So that's the compassionate giver. The second one, we would call it a consistent giver. A consistent giver is somebody that just chooses an amount, whatever the amount is. And I would just say, just go to God and ask. And whatever you sense that God's asking you to do, I would encourage you to take that step, but make it consistent. Because you make it consistent, what you're saying is, I want to put God first. I want to make sure that the God's a true priority in my life. And I want to make sure that I'm really consistent in how I give back to him. And so again, if you go to willowcreek.org/givenow, you can literally do it a moment like this. You can just select any amount and you can make it recurring in any way that you see fit. And that's just a way to become a consistent giver. The third one we call a Christ-first giver. And the reason we call it a Christ-first giver is we think about the biblical principle of the tithe. Somebody's willing to give 10% of their income. And so it's also consistent, but it's a consistent amount that just goes in line with this biblical principle of the tithe. And so it's a stretch for a lot of us. As we talk about a heart of sacrifice, this would reflect a heart of sacrifice for a lot of us to think about doing that. And so I would encourage you, go to willowcreek.org/givenow and set up a recurring tithe if you want to be a Christ-first giver. The last group, we call it a catalyst giver. There are certain people that God has just given the gift of generosity. They love to give. And there's just really something that God uses in their life in a significant way. It's not about the amount they give. They just are generous people. They like to go above and beyond. And we actually have a catalyst team around here. There's 400 plus people across all of our locations. We come together to try to fuel God's mission above and beyond what we'd be able to do otherwise. And so you'll even see in that drop-down menu, there's an opportunity to select Catalyst type of giving. There's these initiatives that are above and beyond. Or if you want to become a part of the Catalyst team, simply send an email to catalyst@willowcreek.org. We'd love to have you a part of this experience. And so I know that we've already collected the offering in the room, but as you consider what it would look like to be invited into this incredible journey of generosity, I'd love to pray for you and pray for these gifts. God, we just say thanks for who you are and how you're moving. God, it's not just about what we give. It's about the heart behind the gift that I know actually matters most to you. And so, Father, may we not be a people who give because we feel guilty or give because we feel obligated. God, may we give out of a place of thanksgiving, out of a place of sacrifice, out of a place of joy, out of a place for passion for you and for your mission. God, we love you. We give of ourselves to you as a tangible expression of our love and a desire to grow in our trust in you. God, we love you. We pray that in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. I'd love to invite you to your feet. We're going to stand and sing one more song as we just offer up our worship together. We can allow even this moment, a moment of worship, to be an expression of our sacrifice to God. May we never give to God that which costs us nothing. Let's worship him together.